It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Super excited to have you guys here. The year 2015, booyah, is coming to an end. It just blows me away. It happened so friggin' quick. Hey, I just wanted to kind of finish the year. I'm going to be reading one of these a day for the next 13 shows. This is an article I found on businessinsider.com / mentally strong people. All right, 13 things mentally strong people don't do. All right, so you can start, checking yourself out, comparing to these mentally strong people. So I like this first one. All right, this is to me such an important characteristic. They don't waste time feeling sorry for themselves. Feeling sorry for yourself is self-destructive, Morin writes. Indulging in self-pity hinders living a full life. It wastes time, creates negative emotion, and hurts your relationships. The key is to affirm the good in the world, and you will begin to appreciate what you have. The goal is to swap self-pity with gratitude. Booyah, self-pity with gratitude. I just thought these are some great strategies. So I'm going to be sharing one with you once a day for the next 13 days as we wrap up 2015. Unbelievable. All right, let's get this party started, so to speak. My first guest, Sean Sommerkamp. Sean Sommerkamp is a certified professional coach with a career spanning 6 years in the U.S. Navy Submarine Service and 20 years in Fortune 100 America with companies like GE and Johnson Controls. Sean created a trademarked tool that helps Christian professionals instantly unblock themselves in any situation called tough tuning. No, called thought tuning. It uses six-step self-talk process combined with knowledge of one's own core values to help achieve what they believe to be power of positive thinking, but were unable to sustain results. He is unique in the fact that my lips are wearing out and I'm unable to read English. That's what makes it unique. Now, let's try this again. He is unique in that he blends business experience, corporate leadership, Bible truth, and coaching science to help Christians professionally and financially excel through transformational thinking. Today, the motivational near, I'm not sure if I'm getting that right. I'm sure he'll correct me. Christian Coaching offers one-to-one professional coaching as well as electronic tools and resources designed to bring immediate as well as lasting change. Sean Sommerkamp, welcome to Money for Lunch. Sean?
Thanks for having me, Bert. It's really great to be here. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
You bet. All right. So the tagline here, the motivational near, am I even getting close to that? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, you're close. It's motivation ear. It's a combination.
Motivation ear. I knew it.
Motivation ear.
It makes so much more sense when you say it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, as I caution many people who come on the show. English is my second language, so sometimes when there's a funky pronunciation, it just throws off the phonetics that I was taught in public school. It's like I don't get it, but motivation here makes a lot of sense. I love it, and I like this thought tuning because really, speaking of Bible truth, right? I mean, Christ himself, as well as other prophets and other religious leaders, have always taught us that it is our thoughts and our words that defile us, right? That can hurt us.
Yep, Exactly. In fact, that quote that you started out with from Business Insider is perfect. When we have gratitude, we're starting from a mindset of thinking gratitude. That immediately sets us up for success because we're focused on the good and not the bad. And ancient
right.
wisdom from the Bible really does set this up for us today, modern day wise. We'll talk about that more, I'm sure, in a few.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. All right, so I got to ask you this. Here you are. You devoted 6 years to the U.S. Navy. By the way, thank you so much for doing that. I have a lot of appreciation and for you and the other brave men and women that serve our country. So thank you so much for that, Sean.
Thank you.
And so here's my question to you. You served in the Navy. You served in Fortune 100 companies. What made you go into specific, not just coaching, but Christian coaching?
Yeah, that's a great question. Ultimately, I've always had a passion for the Bible. I studied it constantly when I was younger. And as I got older, I thought I was supposed to somehow be in the full-time ministry as the leader of a church, a pastor, something. But it never really came to fruition as much as I pursued it. Instead, I got sent into corporate America. And once there, I was kind of trying to find my way. What's my purpose in life? What's my mission? And eventually I was in one of the largest companies in the world. And as part of their executive leadership training, they sent us to this private college campus that they built in New York for 5 days to just really pour themselves into us and teach us how to be great leaders. And one of those days, we got to experience an executive coach, which I had never even heard about before. It was just a revolution to me. At that moment, after spending a half a day with this executive coach, everything started to kind of come together. My passion for God's word, my success in corporate America, and now this new field called executive coaching, where I could actually go and help other people using my knowledge of corporate and career business as well as Bible.
I think it's great. No, I like that. I like the twist there, or the niche there. So let's talk about this. I want to get into positive thinking. I want to say that I, in my opinion, some people misuse or maybe aren't aware exactly how positive thinking works. So I want to dive into this. There has been an increased focus or awareness, if you will, of the idea of positive thinking again as a platform for financial and professional success. What's your take on this new surge of positive thinking? Do you agree with it? Disagree with it? Why?
I agree with you that people have misunderstood it and as a result have misused it. Yes, having a positive mindset, like you said at the beginning of the show, it sets us up for success. It doesn't matter if you're standing on the stock exchange floor on trading day or you're in the octagon before a big fight or a football player on the field before a big game. It is really hard to be effective if you're discouraged or doubtful or in a negative thinking pattern. So, yes, thinking positively is foundational. But this idea of the power of positive thinking, when people are told to think positive, what do? They often think the exact opposite of whatever negative thing they were dwelling on.
Right.
That's the mistake. Let me give you an example, if I may. Let's say a senior executive is worried about his or her Q4 results, and they can't get out of the mindset of, I've blown it this time, I'm going to get fired, the board's had enough, it's all over. The answer is not to tell themselves the opposite of that. Telling themselves the opposite of that may just be telling themselves a lie.
Right.
And when we lie to ourselves, we sabotage our chances for success. Why? Because people see through the lie. If you're not believing what you're telling yourself, your audience or your customers or your colleagues or partners, whatever, they're not going to either. So what should that executive say to him or herself instead? Well, like you read during the intro for my intro, focus on your own core values. Every one of us has a set of deeply held beliefs that we use as a success filter. You do, I do, all of your listeners do. We can't help it. For example, mine, emotional health, leadership, fun, integrity, and spirituality. When in a tough spot, instead of lying to myself with this positive thinking mess, I can tell myself the truth. So in that executive example I gave a minute ago, the best thing for that executive to do is to focus on what's true about them. Instead of saying, I'm doomed, I'm going to get fired, or the opposite, the positive thinking is, oh, I'm not going to get fired. They love me. They're going to keep me here forever. My job is completely safe. Well, that could be a lie. So the right thing is to tell themselves something about their own core values that is true. For example, the results are not where I want them to be this year, but I'm a leader. I'm an innovator. I'm a man or a woman of integrity and drive. I have real ambition, and I will make a difference and turn this around. Do you see the difference, Bert?
Absolutely. I think that hopefully everybody picked up on the difference. You're still being positive, but you're being positive in a more realistic way. To say there, you know, to say as the example you gave, oh, they love me, they're not going to fire me, that is more positive deception than positive thinking. Because,
yeah.
You know, when you're the leader, when you're responsible and the board's unhappy with you, yeah, let me tell you, one of the first things they look at is, well, did we fire this guy? And that is just the easiest thing for them to do, is to fire somebody. And, you know, but of course, you have to be able to bring to their attention all your positive leadership positions. Hey, you know what? I know we're not where we want to be, but, you know, because I believe in my ability to do X, Y, and Z, here's how we're going to fix this. That's really what they want to know, or at least part of what they want to know. So I like the way I really do like that example. I think it's a great way of using positive thinking you know, in any scenario, you have to be able to focus on what you bring to the table. And again, not to, you know, overuse it, but like you said, I'm a leader. I've done this before. I know I can do it again. And start, you know, enumerating how what strengths that you have that can help solve the situation.
Yep, and they're called your core values. And all of us have 5 core values. You do. I don't know if you've ever done a core values assessment, but that's one of the foundational things in my coaching. I always start with every new client doing a core values assessment, helping them understand who they are at their very center so that they can start looking at the world through this truth instead of this silly power of positive thinking, opposite of negative thinking technique.
All right, so when you say we all have, did you say specifically we all have 5 core values?
Yeah, we are made up of a lot of different core values, but generally speaking, 5 emerge as our prominent ones. Those 5 core values are something that sit kind of below the surface. They're something that you've been molded over time, a thing that you have developed because of your own personal experiences. You've developed deeply held beliefs. And everything that you do in life is filtered through these things. And most of us go through life with them just below the surface in our subconscious. What I do is just foundational for my coaching is help that person immediately see those core values so that they can start to address situations in their lives from this place of truth.
Gotcha. All right. So let's talk about this real quick. Because I think that whether or not you're a Christian, I think that there's a lot of confusion surrounding the topic of money and success. And then I think when you throw in religious overtones, it really messes people up. And again, we'll stick to Christianity because it's an area that both of us feel comfortable in. And it just so happens that this was brought up by it's a Twitter follower called Mr. Wow. Adam, thank you so much for this. And so Adam writes about, you know, the balance in Christianity between money and success and being a good Christian. Any thoughts on this?
Yes, boy, that's a very powerful topic. I'm glad you brought it up. The truth is, we are designed to be prosperous. That is foundationally the way Jesus meant it. John 10:10, I have come that they may have life and live it prosperously. And yet, a lot of Christians back away from being very successful because they think that money is the root of all evil. I think that's in 1 Timothy 6. That's not what 1 Timothy 6 says. 1 Timothy 6 says the love of money is the root of all evil. So my direction, my belief, and the way I kind of guide the folks that I coach, let's go out and be wildly successful, the best in our industry, the best version of us that we can. Let's make as much money as we can, but let's use it to glorify God. But in the context of church and, you know, our local community, we can take that money and serve a greater good to help people in greater need. It doesn't mean we should stop being successful or stop being passionate. We have the example of Jesus, one of the most passionate men that's ever lived, if not the most passionate, very, very goal-driven, very focused on his mission and his plan, and he, you know, achieved what he was here to achieve. I believe we are called to be just as driven and just as focused on, you know, being ambitious to our own goals.
Yes. Well, and you know what? I have read the Bible multiple times. I try to read it once a year. And just this year, I have discovered this phrase, and I can't, you know, I bookmarked it, but I can't remember where I bookmarked it at, and where Jesus Christ talks about this is the gospel of abundance.
Yeah. But John 10:10.
There you go, John 10:10. Man. And so, you know, a lot of us, again, we forget what that means. And I think that, you know, put it like this, guys and girls, generally speaking, and when I say guys, I mean everybody, but you were not created by an all-powerful being and put on this planet to be miserable and mediocre. And if you look at the pattern of life, we are not going to have children, raise our children to be anything but as abundant as they can be. We're not going to give,
right.
You know, most of us anyway, there are some exceptions because they have, what do you call it, they're out of the realm of whatever, but of normalcy. But for most parents, you want your children to be happy and to succeed and to be prosperous. Not that we all have to be multi-billionaires. That's not what's going to make
right.
us happy. That goes back to what you were saying about our core values, right? And so
right.
what's interesting to me is, because something else that you said about our core values, sometimes these core values are something that is kind of drummed into us over time and we believe it. But the reason why a lot of us struggle, and I want your opinion on this, is a lot of us have this mixed emotion or these mixed values about money. I want to be successful. Oh, money is bad. I want to provide for my family. Oh, you know, then but I'm too successful, I'll be judged. So as people, and again, as Christians, a lot of us have these mixed emotions about money and success and living prosperously. So how do you go about changing your core beliefs?
Well, your core values tend to not revolve around money at all. They tend to be more character things. And again, I'll mention it in a little bit where you can download and take a look at a core values assessment. But ultimately, when I do my workshops, this is the very topic that comes up more than any other topic. Sean, are you saying it's okay to go out and be financially successful? And the truth is, the answer is yes. We want to be successful in what we do, and the marketplace rewards success. It rewards innovation. It rewards drive and ambition. We don't want to put a lid on our energy, on our creativity. We don't want to misuse our talents. But when the money does start coming in, and even if your desire is to make money and leverage your earnings, the way to leverage it in a righteous way is to focus on how to use it to glorify God, how to use it to serve other people that are less fortunate. This is the answer. When someone says, Sean, how can you say pursuing money is not wrong? And I say, before you make that money, commit to giving it away. And hold to that commitment when you start making it. You don't have to change your lifestyle. But when you do live to your fullest potential, achieving what you want to achieve with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, the marketplace will reward you, but give it away. Did I answer the question, Bert? I want to make sure I'm answering.
You know what? I think you answered it, and I think that, unfortunately, we're out of time, and we'll have to bring you back and talk more about this because I think it's such an important topic, Sean. And I think so many people screw it up, and I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's about these core beliefs, and sometimes these core beliefs are unfortunately not our own, and we have to maybe look at that. The other thing I want to point out is if you study the Bible, one of my favorite parables is the parable the 5 talents or the 10 talents or the parable
the
of the talents, right?
Yep.
So
yep,
one person was given 5, one person was given 2, and one person was given 1. And
yep, exactly.
And most of us who study the Bible know that, you know, the guy who had 5 turned it to 10, the guy who had 2 turned it into 4, and the guy who had 1, he misused his talent and buried it because, you know, his explanation is that, hey, you know, that I know that you're really a tough master and that you reap what you do not sow and stuff like that. But to me, the explanation, and I want to get your opinion on this before we wrap up, is, you know, is that he, you know, I call it fear or something else, but fear, being afraid to take risk, he buried his talent, and therefore if you don't use it, you'll lose it, kind of a thing, right? That is a spiritual law. That was a consequence that we saw. What's your interpretation of these talents?
I think you're right on the money, and boy, you really bring up a timely one. On my YouTube channel, YouTube Motivation Year, one of the lessons that I have there, a video, is called Simplify Your Life. And the entire message is on the parable of the talents. And I'll just say briefly, the one who buried his talent, it all came down to what he was telling himself about the master. He self-sabotaged. That's a perfect example of why I use thought tuning and talk about thinking positively, because if we do tell ourselves something about our maker that doesn't align with who he is, it will affect our behavior. But if we say, God is giving me permission, 5 talents, that's 5 bags of gold, or 2 talents, 2 bags of gold. He's giving me permission to go and double it. And he doesn't say how. There's nothing about socioeconomic status. He just says, here you go. Go use this. And those that really think of God in an exciting and powerful and fulfilling, abundant way, go out and use their talents to really make a huge difference in life. So thanks for bringing that up, man. Really great point.
Well, Sean, we're out of time. Sean Sommerkamp, I want to bring you back and talk more about not only success, but money and spirituality, Christianity, how all this works together. One of your products is called Thought Tuning, which I love Thought Tuning. I just, when you hear something like that, at least in my experience, when I hear something like that, I always go, ooh, I wish I would have thought about it. I just love a good title like that. And you can find out more about Thought Tuning and Sean Sommerkamp at Motivationeer, MOTIVATIONEER.com. Sean, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thanks, Bert. God bless. Merry Christmas.
All right. Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Good stuff there about money and God. A lot of us have it really so messed up, and you wonder why we struggle. I can attest to you that God did not put you on this planet to be miserable and broke and live in poverty or just living paycheck to paycheck. That is not his plan. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite.
Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Kelly Mierbot. Kelly A. Mierbot is a respected thought leader, speaker, and leadership coach to C-suite executives. In her work with C-suite and senior leaders, Kelly customizes strategies and action plans to help implement long-term positive behavior change for themselves, their people, and their organizations. You can find out more information about Kelly and her work at You Loud and Clear. Ooh, I like that. YouLoudAndClear.com. YouLoudAndClear.com. Kelly Mierbot, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much, Bert. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to have you here. Really like the name of your website, You Loud and Clear. I just because really that's so important for us to be clear, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I was listening to a little bit of your discussion with Sean, and I think you guys were just really nailing some great stuff in that discussion. But it really is important for us to be clear, especially with so much noise in the world competing for our mental real estate. It's really easy to get confused and muddy down in the weeds.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I think, and I want to get your opinion on this, I think that in business, just like in life, when we find ourselves kind of plateauing or struggling, is from a lack of clarity, right? I mean, I'm going to pick on Kodak. Kodak was the leader in photography. They owned all of the patents for digital photography, but they were unclear as to what to do with it. They were unclear as what steps to take. They really needed somebody like a leadership coach to help them, you know, deal with all this change in their marketplace. And because they were unclear, they took no action, and therefore they're gone.
Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of that right now with companies like Kellogg and Campbell Soup that's located here in Camden, New Jersey. You know, they're definitely not clear. And what I see them suffering from is groupthink. You know, they yes. get a lot of the same sycophants around them telling them what they want to hear. And really what they need to do is step back and take an objective look at what the marketplace is asking for. I mean, I saw the CEO of General Mills, which is another cereal company, on CNN a few years ago. I think it was probably about last year this time, and he was saying, it's all about gluten-free and protein. And everybody in the country and in the world knew that probably 6 months before him. And it's like, why did it take that long for you to catch up? You know, and it is because they're not clear. It's because they're getting bogged down in the details and not taking that step back and saying, okay, you know, what can we do to clarify our mission and be more agile and nimble so we can respond in a timely way to the marketplace and its demand?
Yeah, no, I think you hit it. I think you nailed it. I think that this to me is such a great lesson, not only in business, but in life, that we become so maybe not arrogant isn't the word, maybe so complacent, so I don't know, so stuck in our thinking, you know, thinking that, hey, we're too big to fail. You know, we're mm-hmm. we're XYZ. You know, we're the Titanic. We'll never sink.
Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah,
and the minute you start thinking like that, that's exactly when, you know, that's exactly when you start sinking.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and to your point, Bert, and to keep with the theme, money for lunch, I mean, let's look at what happened in 2008 to all the big banks. You know, that was, it was wrapped up in the stories and concepts we tell ourselves. And, you know, you were talking with Sean before about how there are these concepts that are handed down, whether it's from cultural conditioning or family of origin or whatever spirituality that works for you, and we never really question them. And that's where we get into trouble, is we don't question our thoughts and beliefs. I mean, you know, somebody back in the day said, okay, you're supposed to use a fork with dinner. That's what's supposed to happen. But we have these two things that called hands that work perfectly fine. So why is it that we have to use a fork with dinner? It's a concept, you know, and if you just kind of go along willy-nilly without questioning it, then that's really where you get into trouble. And I think, you know, in our society, we get into trouble a lot because we live in a society of a 24-hour news cycle where people are taking these 30-second sound bites as gospel, and it's not. It's not. They don't take the time to take it a step further and do the research and see what the real story is behind that one little blip.
No, absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. All right, so let's get into this. Let me ask you this. Tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you go? How did you get into working with C-suite and senior executives as a leadership coach? Tell me a little bit how you got there.
Sure. Well, I can tell you exactly the day, the time, and the day of the week. I mean, it was January 20th, 2009. It was a Tuesday at 9 a.m. And I had been doing a job in actually corporate radio for 10 years. And I got a tap on my shoulder and walked into my boss's office. And he handed me a manila envelope with my name on it. And he said, you have 10 days to review this with your attorney and sign it. And me and 29,999 of my closest colleagues were getting laid off from our jobs. And fortunately, I was one of the ones that had a severance package and was able to claim unemployment as part of the agreement. And I knew I wanted to do something more life-affirming with my life, but I didn't know what it was. And I ended up hiring a business coach. Her name is Charisse McCrory. She's out of Chicago. And to our point of about what we were talking before, you know, about people who buy into a story, she was one of those people that woke me up to my potential. And, you know, I was really in a victim mindset at that point where I was saying to myself, oh, why did this happen? Poor pity me. And Charisse said to me, I think you're being a victim and you need to take ownership of your life. And while it was really hard to hear at the time, she was exactly right. And it really woke me up to the stories and concepts I was telling myself about what should and shouldn't happen in my life. And she just kept pushing me like a good coach does. And I ended up evolving out of my marketing consulting position into becoming a leadership coach. And it was really by looking back at my life and noticing what had happened from a very early age. And, you know, I had been listening and asking questions for a very, very long time. And really, that's what a good coach does. It's you listen, you ask questions, and you help guide people to the answers within themselves. I'm what's called a non-directive coach. So that means I don't sit there and don't tell you what to do. I really observe and listen and ask really pointed questions to help you find the answer yourself, because I believe that's more sustainable. I'm not the type of coach that tries to create, just codependent relationships. It's really about empowering the person so that I coach myself out of a job. I hope that answers your question. I feel like I went down a rabbit hole there for a second.
No, I just love the fact that, you know, it was Tuesday. It was slightly humid. The winds were blowing out of the north. At 9 a.m., I got this tap on my shoulder.
Well, and I've never had such a... The only reason I know that date is because that was the day President Obama was inaugurated for the first time. So, and the company I was working for was very, very strategic that way, because obviously the press was paying attention to this historic moment that was going on, and they were doing 30,000 cuts, you know what I mean? So it wasn't getting the coverage it would normally get if something like that wasn't happening. So that's the only reason I know that date.
Well, you know, and that makes sense. And then, of course, now there's a new lesson there. If you're going to lay off thousands of people, do it, you know, during the, you know, during a situation like that, right, where nobody will pay attention to the fact that you're laying off tens of thousands of people. There's a little insight here on Money for Lunch, how to lay off tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, and not get the media to cover it. Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about this. So what kind of problems are your clients struggling with when they hire you?
So typically it's you know, a pattern of certain things. It's having problems delegating and letting go. They haven't taken care of their succession plan. Another big one is really work-life balance, which I really don't believe there is such a thing, but I help with that. You know, a lot of times they bring me in to help the organization get really healthy, which means, you know, minimizing politics, minimizing confusion, raising morale, raising productivity, lowering turnover. But I'll tell you that the underlying theme with a lot of my clients is, you know, they can't really talk to HR. They can't talk to their board. Their spouse is probably frustrated with all this work talk at home. So they really need somebody who's going to be a creative partner in their lives and businesses and is going to be really non-judgmental about it. And that's where I come in. You know, I'm the partner that walks alongside them to help them be the best versions of themselves and their businesses be the best versions of itself.
And sometimes when you're trying to be the best version of yourself, that's not always a fun process. Just like your coach did with you, she made you take
right.
ownership. You know, she didn't allow you to have the pity party and blah, blah, blah. No, you know what? Suck it up. A bunch of people got laid off.
Well, to your point, it was done in a very loving way, you know, and
sure.
she said it to me, and I kind of take a page from her book. When I'm about to give some challenging feedback, I'll say something like, "Bert, are you ready for some tough love?" And, you know, if they say yes, then I'll give it to them. If they say no, then I won't. I mean, it's very permission-based coaching, and what I found is, first of all, nobody in my 7 years of coaching has ever said no. But also, you know, it's giving a gift to them. It's telling them the truth, and having the courage to mirror that and reflect it back for them. You know, because there are a lot of people out there who will say, "Oh, Bert, you're a genius. That was such a great decision," when you know in your gut it wasn't. But then everybody around you is validating that it was a good job. So then we kind of get confused, and that clarity, again, is muddied. So for me, it's really important to tell people the truth as I see it, in a very loving and gentle way, just like Charisse had done for me. You know, it was such a gift she gave to me that I just wanted to give that gift and pay it forward to everybody that I come in contact with, whether they're a client or not.
Yes. No, absolutely. All right. So let me ask you this. When it comes to self-education, would you consider yourself a pretty avid reader? Do you constantly stimulate your own, education there, constantly read?
Yes. I mean, in fact, it's funny. I was having this conversation with a colleague of mine, how I don't like when people call me an expert, because I feel like that means that, you know, you're done learning, and I would rather be labeled a forever student. I mean, I'm constantly reading. I try to read at least 2 books a week.
Nice.
And yeah, I try to. I don't always hit the mark, but I try to. And, you know, one of the things that makes me different is I don't ever ask my clients to do something I wouldn't do myself. So if somebody is going on and on about a great assessment, for instance, then and I don't have any experience with it, I'll go and pay for the assessment and go through it myself so that I can speak to them on a very experiential level. So if somebody calls me or suggests something to me that I'm not familiar with, I will definitely go out and either read it or experience it so that I can speak from my own experience.
Right, right. All right, so speaking from your own experience, what is like maybe one of your favorite books this year or, you know, what's like the best book you've read this year and why?
Well, there two come to mind. Okay. One that I'm looking at right now, one is called Essentialism. It's by Greg McKeown, and it's the art, the disciplined pursuit of less. So it's doing less, but doing it better. And kind of like we were talking about in the beginning, I think there's a lot of noise and a lot of competition for our attention these days, and it's really easy to get distracted by all the shiny balls that are in our vision. So Greg talks about really focusing on things and asking yourself the question, is it essential? And he even goes into the fact, into a way of saying no, but saying it gracefully, because, you know, in this day and age, we tend to overextend ourselves. So a yes to you, maybe a no to something that really means a lot to me. So, you know, essentialism is really about paring down and focusing and doing things, doing less things, but doing them on an extraordinary level. So I really, really love that book. And I recommend that to my clients all the time because they're very, very busy people. And it's important for them to focus on the important things.
Okay, what was the name of that book again?
It's called Essentialism.
Essentialism, okay.
Yeah, and it's by Greg McKeown.
Okay, and the next one?
The next one I just finished. It's Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, and she wrote Eat, Pray, Love, but this is more of kind of a manifesto to living really creatively beyond fear. So she talks about her process of writing, and since I'm in the middle of writing my own book, it was really very helpful to stop those, you know, that inner critic in your head that may prevent you from giving birth to something very beautiful into the world that the world definitely needs, whether you're a writer or an artist or a musician, you know, just do it and bring forth your gift because, you know, you said something earlier when you were talking with Sean that, you know, God, the universe, whatever you want to believe in, meant us to live abundantly. Well, that means not living in fear. And even though there are a lot of critics out there, including the one between our ears, it's really important to push past that and bring forth what we were supposed to bring forth. So Elizabeth Gilbert does just a beautiful job of composing this book. In fact, I read it in a day, and then I turned around and started it over the second day because it was just so well written.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I love a book like that. And one of the things that I started doing this a couple of years ago, you know, when I find a book that really speaks to me, I find that I want to immerse myself in that book. So not only will I read the book, but I'll also buy the Audible.
Yep.
Or in some cases, yeah, and if it's not available on Audible, I'll go ahead and buy the CDs. But I want to hear it. I want to feel it. I want to read it. I really want to immerse myself in it because I know that's how we all really learn it, understand it, when we immerse ourselves in it, just like we do with language or with arts or something else. Mm-hmm. If we can bombard our senses with it, then we really understand, you know, what's happening.
Yes. Amen. I agree with that 100%. And I was just thinking about another interview I was on last week, and it was a Blab interview, and all of us were smelling our books because, you know, like you, I buy it on Audible, and I listen, I make my car my classroom wherever I'm driving, and then I come home, and I want that tangible book feel. Like, I'm not a big e-reader. I love to actually have the book and feel it and just really immerse myself in it and try to put it into practice. So bravo to you that you put that into practice in your life because it's so powerful.
It is, it is. And I'm like you. I prefer the physical book. There is just something magical about that. I like, yes, I do read some things on the e-readers, if you will, but I still like the tangible book in my hands. I like to, you know, sometimes I'll take notes, or Sometimes it's not notes. Sometimes I'm inspired. Ooh, that's a great book title that inspired. Or, yeah, it's a great domain name. Or, you know, that's a, you know, maybe there's a quote out of that book that, it, you know, that I want to turn it into something. And sometimes it's just, you know, you can't do that with an e-reader. Not to mention that a book doesn't need batteries, doesn't need to be recharged. The signal can't be interrupted. I mean, it's just, it's there. It's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And books just kind of, I don't know, they just have a smell to them that I really, really, I love. I don't know if it's something in the ink or in the glue and the binding, but I just really just love the way a book smells and feels in my hand.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. I totally like that, the smell of my book. I've never thought about it, but you're right, you know. All right, so you mentioned earlier that sometimes you don't want to ask your clients to do something that you haven't done. So, you know, if there's a training that they're going through, you try to also go through that training. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about one of your most powerful trainings that you've ever been through or experienced, and why was it?
So I would have to say that Byron Katie's 9-Day School for the Work, and I'm getting certified in her process now, and it was really, for me, it was a powerful tool because it helps you question and inquire into the stressful thoughts and beliefs in your mind. And I've been through it twice, and it was just one of those things that was life-changing for me. I used to get really stressed and very anxious, and you know, I'd been through therapy and all that, you know, fun stuff, but I never had something tangible to deal with the thoughts in my head. And she has created this written process that really deals with what you're going through in your life, and she's done it. And what's really interesting is that we are the source of our stress and our problems in our lives. We are.
Yes, we are.
Nobody else. It stops here. And kind of like Cherise said to me back in 2009, it's about taking ownership of your life. And the great thing about us being our problem is we are the solution. So, you know, it's not Bert doing something to me that's going to stress me out and send my day kind of sideways. It's me. What am I thinking and believing about how this situation should be that's causing me that stress? So I would say her work, any of Byron Katie's work, is really, really powerful. And, you know, she's done, well, when he was alive, she used to tour a lot with Dr. Wayne Dyer. She's done work with Eckhart Tolle. She's worked with Anthony Robbins. She does really powerful work in the prison system in California. I mean, her work is life-changing. She's just amazing, and I'm really grateful that I'm able to not only go through it, but hopefully once I'm certified, bring it into the world here, you know, in Philadelphia.
Sure. And the name, and her name again is Byron, you said?
Yeah, it's Byron Katie. And I know that's
K-A-D-Y.
A weird first name. K-A-T-I-E. And her website is thework.com. And I try to help my clients go through it, and I've seen a lot of changes in them if they're open to it. I have one client that struggled with it for about a year, and then once it clicked in and he got it, he does it every day, and it's made a huge difference in his life, which for me is that's the greatest thing, is when you see people living into their potential. There's nothing better than that.
Not only that, we're attracted to people like that. You come across somebody who is, let's say, self-aware, and they're just full of this light and confidence, not arrogance, but this light and this confidence and this passion. And you're going, yeah, that's what I want to be like, and that's why we are attracted to them, because they are connecting with that better us inside of us, and we're going, yes. I mean, when you look at the heroes that you consider heroes, these are the people who are living their life the way you want to live your life, and they kind of propel you and pull you forward, and they help you do those things. And I think that you know, it's such a you know, it's such a neat thing to see, and we just don't see enough.
Right. I mean, you're exactly right. And it's to me, it's that quiet confidence.
Yeah.
Those people who don't even need to take credit for things that are really creating the most movement in the world, you know, because it's the credit is a function of the ego. It's, you know, mind trying to stay identified. So it's, hey, I donated to that charity and let me get my name all over a building, which again, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, how about those unsung heroes behind the scenes that are really doing amazing things, but just do it for the sake of loving, giving and changing the world. It's not about, hey, I need the credit for this. It's just about lifting the world up into the place that it's supposed to be.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? And I do want to say this. Look, there's nothing wrong with, as you said, needing the credit. I think a lot of us sooner or later need the credit.
Uh-huh.
Then as we get bigger or as we get better inside, credit isn't that big of a deal.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, there's no judgment in needing the credit, but I would definitely question that. I mean, why do you feel you need the credit? What is it? What's lacking in your life, or what do you need to question that is driving you to say, okay, you know, I need that award or I need that recognition? Because, you know, the person that's truly peaceful doesn't need that. It's just the delight in giving, you know, or the delight in improving somebody's life. I mean, one of the things I learned from Byron Katie is to do three random acts of kindness every day without getting caught. And if you get caught, you start over. So, you know, I've done things where, you know, I've been near somebody who I perceive to be homeless and I've dropped a $20 bill on the ground and said, oh, I think you dropped this. You know what I mean? And
right.
For me, it's great just knowing that I did that for somebody else and I don't really need everybody to recognize it. For me, it's a lot more fun to do it in secret.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you know what? And again, guys, it's to me, it's all a work in progress. We all want to get
Absolutely.
There. I mean, and so there's nothing wrong with it. I much rather have a bunch of people out there getting credit for all their good deeds than not doing good deeds, right?
Right, right. I mean, and again, there is no judgment in this. If you like getting the recognition, that's great. I just speak from where I stand in my experience, and that's how I experience the world. But if you want your name on a building, go for it. That's awesome. It's just, for me, I don't need that.
Right, right. All right, Kelly Mierbot, we're out of time. Excellent to have you on the show. Looking forward to have you back again. Talk more about I don't know, getting better I'll just leave it like that. Getting better in life, business, health. Kelly Mierbot, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you so much for having me, Bert. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Good stuff there from all our guests. Man, I love when we have, when we get a bunch of good guests. And luckily, for the most part, we tend to get really good guests. So good stuff there. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.